and we are delighted to kick off the conference with 3M. We have both Inga Thulin and David Meline, CEO and CFO, with us. Inga's chairman, president, and CEO. He's to my left of 3M. He became CEO in February of this year, chairman in May, and prior to that, Inga was chief operating officer of 3M. He has held numerous management positions, both domestically and internationally, with 3M since 1979, but he cautions me he joined in grammar school, so in case anyone's trying to figure out the dates. And to his left, we have David Meline, CFO. He's held this position since March of last year. He joined 3M in 2008 as controller and chief accounting officer. Prior to that, he was with General Motors and had roles including CFO of North America and CFO of Europe. So with that, I'm going to hand the mic over to Inga, who's going to give us a quick update on the company. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, and good morning. Been in the company for 30 years, so I'd like to give a little bit of perspective on why this is an incredible company in terms of competitive advantages. So first of all, I've led the international for 8 years before I became CEO last year in May, and then took over the CEO position this year in February. The competitive advantage and position for 3M is a couple. First of all, it's a unique culture of innovation, and innovation, research, and development is the center of the plan for us and have been for many, many years, and will remain the same as we move forward, which means that we are able to develop new products and solutions for our customers in order for them to become better. So it's an important element in our plan. We have a broad-based portfolio, and it's broad and it's deep, and every segment we're in on the six business segments are leading in their respective markets, and all of them have over 20% operating income margins, so very strong position. There's many strengths from the company in terms of, first of all, technologies, process manufacturing, global presence, and brand equity. And in addition to that, a very collaborative team around the world that are working together in order to find solutions based on technology platforms, then the way we can manufacture that, and then how we can commercialize it on a global and local scale. And that's another thing to think about 3M. We are both global in terms of capabilities, but we're very local in terms of our execution with subsidiaries in most countries around the world, which make a unique element of us to be first into every country. We don't go through distribution as the first layer into a country. We do it through our own subsidiaries. There's many leverage points for 3M, and one is, of course, manufacturing capabilities. The other one is technologies. And then is the infrastructure with subsidiaries around the world that everyone can use as they move into the country and commercialize the products. And then we have an embedded operational excellence model that I think we are well known for, well respected for, which is based on Lean Six Sigma. So if you take that together of what we have done over the years, we have had outstanding performance relative to return of invested capital, very strong balance sheet, and we have returned a lot of good cash flow for the shareholders. So if you think about it, since 2004, we have had margins ahead of 20% every year, and we have had return of invested capital above 20% for the last decade, including 2008 and 2009. So very impressive from that perspective. And sales have doubled in the last decade from $16 billion to $30 billion. So, and relative to this year then, first half of the year, record sales of $15 billion, record earnings per share of $3.25 per share, and we took also 7 cents or one-time actions, which was in order to improve our businesses as we move ahead. Pricing was good and productivity was good, specifically relative to manufacturing in productivity. And on top of that, we have been able to really drive a good balance in between investment and cost management during the first part of the year. As we move ahead, a couple of things that we're doing. We're type of framing us for the future with a new vision for the company that we've laid out. We have restated six strategies. Four are around growth, one are around people, and one is around operational excellence. And we have type of formed three new divisions into the company in areas where we believe we have big opportunities for the future. We formed mining, oil and gas as a division. We formed aerospace as a division. And we formed defense as a division. So three new divisions was formed. We also consolidated six divisions into three divisions. Stationary and office supply, two sizable divisions of around 800 million each, was formed and consolidated into one big division, all relative to relevance to the market. Safety, security, and track and trace was consolidated into one business, and the same was with a home environment that was moved into a do-it-yourself division in the company. So in terms of forming new divisions for opportunities, three was formed, and we were consolidating six into to three. We also made a step-up change relative to our commercialization perspective and appointed vice president for sales on a global base, vice president for marketing excellence on a global base, and we put the total focus on Lean Six Sigma, also from a central position in order to improve efficiency and productivity and cost in the company. So I think those steps are important for us as we move ahead, specifically relative to where we stand. We have a very strong position in research and development. We're very strong in manufacturing. And now we will go for a global execution in terms of commercialization. And that is why we then have stepped up sales, marketing, e-transformation, a type of center of excellence as we move ahead. So with that, I end there, and then I think we go to...
Thank you, Inga. As you get seated, one of the reasons we wanted to have 3M kick the conference off is because you touch so many end markets, especially on a shorter cycle basis. So visibility on the macro is very helpful. And so maybe we can start there geographically. Take us through, let's start with Europe in terms of what you're seeing. It's 23% of your revenues. You're a little bit weaker in the second quarter. Healthcare was fairly strong, but what additional color can you provide, you know, at the ground level in Europe today?
We just came back from Europe, actually. David and myself and the team was over there last week. We knew as we moved into this year that it would be a tough year. So we have planned very well for that in terms of the efficiency for us. And the plan for us in West Europe is very much around operational excellence. And that had started for us a couple of years back with we type of adjusted organization in Europe and went for more regional organization structure versus subsidiary by subsidiary. So we tried to drive efficiency in the back office specifically while we maintain the front end in terms of commercialization. We knew that this will be a tough year, we are operating relative to plan. They're doing very well in terms of margins. And I would say, generally speaking, is of course currency that is a headwind for us. But we're very pleased with the way they operate in Europe. And as I said, this was nothing for us that came as a surprise. I think we type of planned for tougher time in Europe, generally speaking, 3 to 4 years back, where we both separated Central East Europe from West Europe and Middle East Africa from West Europe. And then in West Europe, we regionalized that portion. So we formed, rather than have four subsidiaries in Nordic, we now have one regional organization there. The same was for Alpine, the same for Iberia, the same for Benelux. So it's working well for us. But it's a tough situation. I think the operational excellence is important for us, and we take market share.
You mentioned currency. You know, with the weakening of the dollar, David, how does that ripple into quickly into the P&L? You're one of the few companies that we cover that does currency hedging. So is it how? What's the delay factor before we see it?
So the way we do hedging for the business is basically we do it on a 12-month rolling basis, and we hedge roughly 50% of our net exposure. So that gives us some visibility in terms of exchange rate movements. We're able to have some visibility and forecast the impact of those movements. So as we finished the second quarter, when we issued guidance, we'd actually indicated that we were updating the outlook for the year, assuming the euro would be at 121 against the dollar. Obviously, above 130, where we're sitting today, is certainly supportive to our results on the year. As to how significant that is, quite honestly, it's relatively insignificant within the context of the fact that we only have a few months left in the year. We have the hedge, which certainly offsets about half of that impact. So I would say, you know, no material change vis-a-vis our forecast, but certainly on the margin, it's supportive to the results.
That's helpful. For just go back to Europe for a second.
Sure.
The term we always use and that we look for is destocking, and you of all your SKUs can get a flavor whether a destocking element has run through or not. So where does that stand?
I think it's very lean. I think, you know, most companies today, globally, to be honest, are really have taken action relative to the inventory level. So I think that the stock levels are now very much based on demand, and we don't see any, have not seen any difference in the last 6 months.
Okay, China, 9% of revenues. Second quarter was exceptionally strong, 10% organic revenue growth. That's excluding electronics. Again, healthcare was one of the strengths. So from the businesses that you touch today, how's China feel?
First of all, the facts are that first quarter of this year, excluding electronic, was growth of 8%. Second quarter, as you said, was growth of 10%. China started to slow the second half of last year, as Europe did, meaning the comparison for the rest of the year will be easier for us. Healthcare is doing very well, not only in China, but broad-based healthcare for us in international and specifically in developing emerging countries are doing very, very well. And so when we look upon China, we know that we will have faster growth in the second part of the year due to comparisons, and it feels better. And I think the three laggers that we have talked about before relative to China in terms of consumer electronics, domestic market, and export to West Europe, I think that we now hope that both domestic market is coming back and so consumer electronics export to West Europe will probably take some time.
If we switch into the U.S. side of the macro, the fiscal cliff, I've heard everything from some off-road equipment customers saying, I'm going to hold off until the elections. Are you seeing that mentality ripple into any of 3M's businesses?
No, we have not. It's very difficult for us to determine that, so I cannot say that we have seen that by definition. U.S. for us, and I would say North America, including Latin America, has been the fastest growing geographical areas for us in the first part of the year, which is very unusual in a way, and it's very difficult for us to say if that's been any impact relative to the cliff that you're talking about.
So if we step away from macro, and certainly during Q&A, if people have other questions, feel free to focus there. One of the points I wanted to touch on here is, Inge, you took the reins this year for 3M. The idea is I think investors and analysts are still getting to know who you are in what your tenure as the leader for 3M, how that will develop, and what mark you will make on the company. So from my perspective, you are the consummate insider. So 30 years with the company, deep culture carrier. So from this point, how do you think investors will see how Inge makes his imprint on the company?
Well, I think, first of all, insider, yes, maybe, but also an outsider. And I am very market and customer-oriented, and I've lived all over the world, so I've had a lot of experience from the outside of 3M relative to the market. So I think that's important to put into the picture. So I think the other thing is an advantage for me. I've had opportunities to be part of this company for many years, and for the last 10 years in the two strategic cycles, I was part of the management working on that.
And the two cycles had a couple of different characteristics in terms of playbook. The first 5 years, 2000 to 2005, was very much about efficiency, operational excellence, and productivity through Lean Six Sigma at the time. The second part was very much about the big dream, reinvigorating research and development, and type of drive up the pipeline of new products. And we start to grow slightly better in the second part of the 10-year period. Now when we go into the next 5 years period in terms of strategic plan, it's for us to build on those two strings, right? So we have a very strong DNA in the company relative to operational excellence. As I just said here in my opening comments, we're now focusing even more on Lean Six Sigma in order to get focus on it, in order for us to be able to reinvest for growth. So I think still there's an opportunity there. And then it's for us to globally commercialize in a more effective way the stronger pipeline we have today versus what we had 5-6 years ago. And as you know, the NPVI have gone from maybe 20s up to 32, so the pipeline is by definition much stronger. So now it's becoming a commercialization issue for us while we continue to invest in research and development, which I made a very clear statement that that's the commitment for us as we move ahead. That's the center of the plan. That is the real differentiation for 3M, is to be able to invest in research and development and commercialize those products. And so NPVI, in a way, is an important metric, but the very important thing is for us to maintain and improve margins, which we can with the flow of new products that will reposition us and help our customers become even more effective. So that's one thing. So I think you will see a commercialization effort, a step up around that. I also think that I'm an individual that believes in prioritization. So I think prioritization will be a clear thing that we will talk about relative to make choices as we move ahead. So I think that those are the differences.
So you tell me, Aideen, you're probably reading too much into this, but one of the things I've noticed, and you just said it up here this morning, are some of the organizational changes, the consolidations of divisions, creating new divisions,
yeah,
and also geographically setting up the Saudi Arabia, the sub-Saharan focuses. Is it an organizational imprint also, an organizational focus? And
No. I think it's, you always start with the strategies. And the strategies are very much around customers and relevance to customers. I think that's where we start. What is the relevance for us relative to customers? The other thing is where to play and how to win. The third thing is about investment, research, and development. If you take those type of things and you think about consolidation of six divisions down to three, that's very much relative to relevance for us in the market versus the customers. I think it's very easy for many companies that you organize yourself based on internal metrics and not external metrics. So I think that's one thing that you say consolidation, which is scale and leverage for us, the easier to do business with. The other three divisions that were formed is based on big opportunities in the marketplace, and we need to build that out as a company. And in all those three places, mining, oil and gas, aerospace, and defense, we had done business before, but the way we did it was by not focusing in with full investment into research and development. So we took basically what we had in the pipeline, went to market and tried to commercialize that. It's my view, what you need to have in order to win, you need to have your own capabilities in terms of research and development so you can get an organic growth through your own pipeline of new products. And in addition to that, when you put a strong management team in place, which we did, they will also be able to create a much stronger business case for eventually other investment, which could include merger and acquisitions as we have. But that's where you try to go with it. So I think strategies first, structure second.
And it's probably not a coincidence that when you set up those two divisions right out of the block first quarter, they killed it with, natural resources are up 20% and aero up 24%. So if you're going to set them up, you want to set them up and with some momentum.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think we saw the results already first quarter, to be honest, based on the organization change. The point was they were doing very well, and now the point is how can we accelerate that? So we start those EBOs, as we call it, emerging business opportunities that were put in place. As I said, we try to
commercialize what is already in the pipeline. When we know it's working, then we put more efforts into it. So I think that I think we should see even more acceleration. And we have big expectation on those businesses as we now have formed them, right? That's why we expect them to go even faster.
So the invitation just went out yesterday for the November 8 Analyst Day in Minneapolis. Matt Ginter will probably cringe if I start asking too much to steal any of the thunder he's got planned. But one of the questions I have to ask is the 3M pyramid. Is that going to be something that will be continue to be worshipped and focused and explained, or will that be something that gets put into the closet?
The pyramid is a way of describing the marketplace. And what we're doing in the strategy is to expand our relevance in the market. So I think that the pyramid is more a symbolic way of talking about the total market in terms of our expansion. So we are continuing to work our way to improve our relevance to the customers, to expand in the marketplace in terms of presence, both from a portfolio perspective, but also geographically. So conceptually, it's something that is there, and I think it's just for us to manage it with our competitive platforms in order to make sure wherever we compete in the marketplace that we make money. And for us, it's, in many cases, it's a market share game, specifically in developed economies, but it's profitable market shares, right? So we're not after market share for the purpose of market share. It needs to be profitable as we take them.
In addition to inheriting a earnings guidance for the year, which has been reaffirmed in the second quarter, you also have inherited, you were part of this plan that set a 7-8% organic revenue growth over the course of the cycle.
Yeah.
We touched on it previous earnings call. It's still investors' top of mind. Is that still achievable? Has the market changed? Has the mix changed at all in terms of what the potential is for that type of growth?
Yeah. I think the market has changed since that target was put in place. So it was done in a different economical environment, and it was based on what the consensus externally was relative to the GDP and IPI growth on a global base. So 7-8% were put in place in that environment. Now it's a stretch target in the way that in 3M, we have an organization that responds very well to stretches. So still, I would say 7-8 is a type of stretch target, but I think the economical environment has changed relative to how achievable that is. So I think that's the answer to the question. But I think that if you look upon the last 10 years for us, our growth rate has been actually 7-8% total. Half of that was organic, and we grew 1.5x IPI during that period of time. So we've been, in the last period, growing 3-4 organically, and now we need to step that up a little bit. So I would say it's a stretch target.
Just in terms of protocol, just as a reminder, so you're going to have a November 8th meeting in Minneapolis. The typical December meeting you had in New York will be a conference call.
That's correct, yeah. That's
okay.
Correct.
And anything else you can share about the agenda? Maybe start whipping up expectations in a frenzy to get people to storm up to Minneapolis?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always beautiful in Minneapolis in December, as all of us know. So you're certainly welcome. In November.
November.
But, yeah, so in November we'll be doing a full review of the businesses. So we'll have several of the sector leaders presenting there. Inga will obviously have a significant portion of the morning where we'll have a chance to discuss in much more depth the vision and strategies for the company, how we're going to deploy against those, and then we'll also have I'll do an update as to our longer term thinking around financial objectives and metrics. So I think it'll be a really interesting morning, and we hope all of you are able to make it out there.
Good. I can see Matt Ginter kind of saying, "Don't disclose too much." So, all right. So, one of the news items that I think caught some people by surprise when it was announced, we thought there would be some issues from a regulatory standpoint, is the Avery Dennison Office Products. So, just kind of, and there was some back and forth in terms of press announcements. kind of frame for us what happened and where it goes from here.
So first of all, there's no new developments in the last since the news came out a couple weeks ago. For those of you who may not be familiar, we entered into a purchase agreement late last year for Avery Dennison's office products group, $550 million acquisition of that business to complement our existing office and stationery products business. We've been going through a regulatory review over the last month, and 2 weeks ago, the Justice Department informed us that they were going to block the transaction. And at that time, we then jointly withdrew our Hart-Scott-Rodino filing. And what we felt the best course of action for the company at that time was to look at the concerns that the DOJ had and attempt to address those. So that's what we're doing right now.
So stay tuned. There's still a potential that something.
We have a contract that remains in place at the present time, and we're reviewing the situation.
Okay. And are there? Just give us a quick update on M&A pipeline expectations for this year.
Sure.
With the budget.
Sure.
And maybe pricing and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I can make some comments on that. First of all, our commitment relative to the value have been 1 to 2 billion, and we stand behind that. So it will be, in terms of value, as important as you have seen in the last strategic planning session. You will probably see slightly bigger than we have done in the past, meaning maybe fewer, but slightly bigger. So we did a lot during the last 5 to 6 years, I think we did around 70. And so I think you will see fewer, but the more strategically important for us and linked into some of the growth opportunities we see, and they should be a little bit more sizable for us, and we should also be able to leverage them broad-based as we do them, either from a technology perspective or from a geographical perspective. So that's an important element, but it, again, our prime strategy is, of course, organic growth. So strategies in terms of acquisition is a tactic here in order to supplement our position as we move ahead. But we are committed to it. The pipeline looks good. We are looking upon a broad base because it's also a way for us to get the good feeling of the total market and how it looks like. So everyone is working on it. We will, David and myself, together with the team, will be prioritized, however, based on strategic importance as we move ahead.
Anything you can comment on in terms of pricing, seller expectations?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, if you look at the pipeline today, and first of all, just to remind us that, and as we've seen with this recent transaction, we set out a plan of $1 to $2 billion deploying against acquisitions this year. The timing is always uncertain as to when you close. So as to whether we'll end up in that place this year, it's still not clear. In terms of the pipeline, it's good. I would say we feel good about the pipeline. We feel good about the situation we're in that I would say there is more realistic expectations right now. In terms of sellers' expectations, and perhaps there was a year and a half ago. And given where we are, given the strength of our balance sheet, that puts us obviously in a very good position to be able to transact should we identify opportunities that are interesting to us.
Want to make sure I have time for any audience questions. So, people, there's a mic around. I know it's still early, so there may not be. And I'm being blocked by a podium here, too. So as you mull over questions, how about hopefully you understand this is a high-quality problem. Second quarter, I think more than half the analysts, conference call, asked about pricing. And it was the fact that it was so strong. So it evokes a how sustainable is that. But nearly 2%, you raised the higher end for the year. Just in terms of where it goes from here, the sustainability, and what that tells you both about new products and visibility into 2013.
Well, maybe I can start on that to say, first of all, We took action early in order to make sure, and I think that's a strength of 3M in order to be able to balance what we can do based in terms of demand and raw material increases. So we took action early in order both to make sure that we compensate for raw material increases, at the same time made sure that we still could play in the marketplace based on demand. Came in place. We have, as you saw, outcome was very, very strong year to day, and it's sticking as we move ahead. So I think it's, again, an advantage for us because we are often the price leader in the market segment. So that's also why we, in many cases, can go early when we see raw material coming in and play potentially negatively for us.
Yeah, I would just add to that. So if you look at how price and raw material trends have developed over really the last now year and a half, we saw very strong raw material cost increases last year, exceeding 4%, which is as high as we've seen as a company in recent history. We had 1% recovery of price last year, which is basically neutralizing that raw material cost impact, in that about 25% of any dollar of revenue is in the form of raw materials. As we came into the year then, we continued to look at the opportunities to get some price performance. We saw momentum in that a lot of the price that was put in place last year only impacted us in the second half. So that momentum carried into the first half. So what happens now as we move forward, the comp gets more difficult because we had price in the second half of last year. And I would say offsetting that is not surprisingly, raw material costs have certainly softened to the point where we see raw material cost impacts in the second half being either flat or perhaps slightly negative. So that'll be a contributor to our profitability and margins here through the balance of the year. I would say not as strong as the first half, but certainly we'll see that continue.
A question up front.
Yeah.
We have a mic coming around too.
Hi. The mining end market has been slightly controversial recently. Can you please address the trends that you're seeing there?
Controversial in terms of?
Well, there have been some changes in CapEx budgets. In Latin America.
Yeah, they have. You know, I think you have to look upon relative to our relative position and the way we build it out. For us today, that is around a $900 million business, which we try to ramp up in the plan up to $2 billion. So, and our base up to this point in time have been very much around safety and security products. And what we try to do now is to move into new spaces. So I think even if that is happening, which I think is a cyclical thing, that will not have an indication for us relative to how we view that opportunity long-term as a company.
Other questions? Here we go.
Can you make a comment on the percentage of sales that you spend on R&D? Are you satisfied with the amount of R&D that you're spending at the moment?
Yeah. First of all, we have spent over the years around 5.5%. I think at time it was up to 7% when we had pharma as part of the portfolio. As we speak, you know, one of the strategies we're laying out, and it's the third strategy of the six, is actually starting with a statement saying invest in innovation. So that's a statement for us in order to make sure that we focus on it and that we upscale the investment as we move ahead. I think the outcome, as we're spending today, around 5.5%, is not bad in terms of the new product vitality index. I think what we would like to see is more what we call class 5, new products to the world, right, which is something that we will like to move resources in order to invest more in. So I think that's the big opportunity for us. It is, as I said, it's the center of the plan for 3M, and I think we have been effective in terms of our investment up to this point in time, but we are very focused, and David and myself are the whole time challenging that line, if you like, to make sure that we as an organization the whole time make sure that we invest on the right level in order to be able to commercialize those products. Because we believe that is the big differentiator for 3M. So I think it should be somewhere in between 5 to 6%. It's the right level for us as we go forward as well.
Just as a follow-up to that R&D question is, how do you optimize R&D spend? You know, there's that Lean and Six Sigma approach, but you can't just walk into the lab and say, innovate, and then expect to see the stream of new products. George used to talk about, say, look, I don't take wheelbarrows of cash and dump it into the R&D session. And so how do you optimize?
Well, first of all, when you look upon research and development, I think we have to separate them in between research and then development. And the research part is 15%, and the development part is 85%. And I would say the development part is more into the divisions and the subsidiaries in terms of working on products that can be commercialized on a shorter term cycle. The research is where people work with 45 technology platforms just coming up with really new to the world technologies that we have done so successfully over many years. I think on the 15% part, the technique there is to not ask question of commercialization times. When will it be commercialized? Those individuals need to have the freedom to work on big projects that will take time, and that will be a big benefit for the company long term, where they are ready to go to what I would say the development phase. In the development phase into the division and subsidiaries, that is where you have to make sure there's clear guidelines, there are clear milestones, and that is where you ask the question relative to commercialization. So you're not are losing the view of that you have to go to market, right? Because it's not only research and development, it's also to be able to commercialize them and do that successfully in time. So I think that's much more focus into the division. And that's happening, I would say, in what we call a product steering committee in each division. And they are meeting monthly, and they have timelines in terms of gates where they're reviewing the project in order to continue or to stop the project. So that's working pretty well. But I think your point earlier is to say that you in many cases, you cannot push too much dashboards, specifically when you're in a look upon the research part, right, which is where people work on with 45 technology platforms to combine them and come with new-to-the-world technologies that can revolutionize some of the businesses. And we have many examples of that in the past, like micro-replication and other things, right? It took a long time before it happened. Now, a big portion of the company is utilizing that technology and very successfully commercialized products.
And do the researchers still have a ability to spend a portion of their time on unassigned projects, things that they want to, you know, have a special interest in?
What is
that arrangement? Because it's been historically pointed to as one of the hallmarks of the 3M lab.
Yeah, the 15% rule is still there. And David and myself actually yesterday we had a big tech forum yesterday where they shared all projects going on in the company. So it was a fantastic event that we went to. And one big section of that event was the 15% project, where people showed what they are doing based on the 15% time that they are putting in. So that's still alive. We're talking about it. It was a big portion of the, not the biggest, but the big portion of the section yesterday. And we just commented yesterday as we flew in that it was actually a really fun afternoon for us, you know, because that's where we saw the future of the company relative to products. So 15% is still alive.
Well, I'm going to suggest that that be part of the November 8th analyst meeting. You should bring just to the highlights of those if we could.
Yeah.
So with that, I want to thank 3M, Inga, David, for presenting here this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.